Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dublin Maker Podcast. I am your host, Vicky Timmy Lee, your maker advocate from the Dublin Maker team. Dublin Maker is an annual maker festival funded by Science Foundation Ireland. In this episode, we have Kate Delaney from Make Create Innovate. We also have Jeffrey Rowe and Tomas Ward co-hosting this episode with me.
So, Kate, welcome to our podcast and thank you for joining us for a chat.
Thanks, Vicky. Great to be here.
And so I suppose we've met several occasions already I find that we have a lot of stuff in common. But for those who don't know, tell us about who you are and what is Make, Create and Innovate?
Well, Make, Create, Innovate is a socially minded organisation, and we basically design and deliver creative technology workshops to young people and adults. And I suppose what that kind of can mean is really anything. It's really about the approach and I suppose the kind of process. And we call it STEAM education, but kind of STEAM education and maker education can be kind of interchanged quite a lot. And so we do that quite a bit. And it's really hands-on making, and that's what it's all about. So, the process is the same no matter who we're working with, whether it's kind of primary, secondary or third level, or kind of working with cultural institutions or library spaces, or even kind of corporate. It's always the same kind of hands-on learning experience.
Okay, hi Kate, it's Tomas here from Dublin Maker. I'm really interested in kind of the history of these organisations like yours. How did you get into this? What was your initial interest and how did it evolve into this wonderful, activity you're involved in now?
Well, my background is music, classical music, and then music technology, and then just working in kind of education and then getting more and more into creative technology and education. So I've been working in education for years and years, and that would be my kind of main role that I would see it. And then I suppose the maker side of things, like kind of making it more hands-on, so kind of getting away from the screen, really has happened with Make, Create, Innovate. So that was a kind of an opportunity that I saw. It was really just a way for me to connect back with my own kind of need as a person and as an educator. And I suppose it was a case of really just looking at my own kind of process and my own teaching and just seeing how I wanted that to change. And how I wanted it to change was to get into being more hands-on and kind of getting away from the way that we usually think about creative technology, which is very much software and kind of screen-based approach.
Yeah, cool, Kate. And Kate, you mentioned music there. So was your first kind of make sort of projects, were they centered on music or were they centered on something else?
I'd say my first kind of projects were, my first creative projects were definitely around music, but I don't focus on music in terms of making. Like making for me and for the people that kind of participate in Make, Create, Innovate, whether it's Siobhan or Eilish or Rona or Muirin or Ben or Jennifer, it's all around whatever they're kind of bringing to it. So if it's, the central point is always education. And so if they're an artist, they're bringing that aspect of it, whether they kind of work with paper or, mechanics or whatever that might be. But for me, making and kind of music aren't necessarily combined in the way that, let's say, I would have studied it. For me, the kind of making aspect of it, it's through education, it's through working with other people. And so the workshops that we kind of come up with do work with sound and they do work with music, but they also work with kind of visual art and robotics and anything that we can kind of think of that kind of has an opportunity to kind of learn about technology in a creative way. So it's not music focused, though sound, there is music as part of it and sound as part of working with sound in different ways.
All right, cool. No, I always find music is always a great kind of icebreaker and sometimes in making. Kate, you mentioned a whole bunch of people there now, because I'm terrible at names and knowing, just being connected with the community, I don't always know who's doing what. So how did you've a large team there, how'd that all come together?
Well, I suppose, the first part was really thinking about trying to work I suppose, trying to engage in an education practice and a maker practice at the same time. So that was the kind of first part. And then it was really the how can we find creative ways of doing it? And so it was a case of kind of finding creative people that I worked with before, and Siobhan Clancy, who is an artist and activist and educator I've worked with for years through different forms. And she came on board really early and basically co-designed most all of the workshops with me, and kind of really worked with we worked together very closely on the kind of ethics of Make, Create, Innovate, and the kind of socially minded aspect of Make, Create, Innovate. And I suppose just kind of there was a lot of kind of long conversations about what we wanted to do and where we wanted to go, and kind of where there was space for us to make things a little bit more equal in that kind of education process. Because there is, you know, as I'm sure you've come across yourselves, there can be huge disparities in gender, but also minority groups when it comes to making. And I think for us to kind of work a lot in mainstream education gave us an opportunity to work across the board with all kind of groups and encourage them to engage and find different ways to engage with the kind of making process that may not be considered before. And so the other people that we work with are mostly kind of artists and educators. So Jennifer McGarry is our primary education specialist. So she works with looking at it from that kind of primary teacher's eye, and looking at how the work that we do can be enrich the kind of primary school curriculum. And then Ben is our secondary school specialist, so he would do that on a post-primary basis. And then Warren is an artist and filmmaker, and then Ailish works a lot with paper. So I suppose we kind of use the skills of the people that we come across and work really well with, who are into what we do and believe in the you know, similar kind of approaches, and we kind of collaborate a lot and design and build together.
I think Kate, that's how I when I heard about Make, Create, Innovate, it was way before kind of Double Maker. I think I was in contact with you with my other hat, because I was just getting into trying to figure out wearables, I think, and looking into kind of electronic workshops for beginners. And for those who, primarily a lot of my stuff is trying to gear towards people who don't tend to go to these kind of workshops because they're terrified of it. And when I saw what you were doing, I wanted to see if we could collaborate or learn from you. And you were doing, I think at the time, I think I met you at the Digital Hub. And you were showing me, I think at the, you also had like, I think some of the stuff were there, like, yeah, and you still haven't packed away fully all the stuff. And you're showing me some examples. And I was just like things like, you know, making your own like board game, making interactive, and you're just starting looking at it and had a trial run. And you were telling me that you were engaging with a lot of the folks around the local area around Dublin 8.
Yeah.
Which was what I was really wanted to do, what I wanted to do for my organization as well before I joined Dublin Maker. So what you're doing, like, it was really fascinating, because I read about you and met you. I was delighted to meet you then at the very, I think it was kind of quite, so sort of near the early stages, I'm not quite sure.
I think so, yeah.
So, and then seeing it grow is fantastic as well. And, but yeah, I'm just like, I suppose whenever we get to kind of collaborate, that'd be fantastic, because you have the educational side with everyone who's on the creative artistic side. And that's kind of the areas that I'm really interested as well. I'm not musically inclined, so I'm trying to learn something, but it's great to see so many people in different experiences to bring together all these kind of creative activities and actually show people that you can actually make something being creative as well, and using a lot of things that you can find around and around it, the household as well. And
yeah.
And I've seen that a lot of the activities now that you've been doing, you've done a lot of cool programs. The most recent one was for Fingal Libraries, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and that was, I've saw a lot of pictures. You know, there's so many kids making so much stuff. It's amazing. So a lot of your activities at the moment, is it aimed at just primarily at kids that are at the moment? Because before you were doing some stuff that were engaging the older community and then adults, anyone, everyone. Like, so at the moment, your current focus, is it mainly under 18s?
Not necessarily, though. Our online, we have pivoted, as many organisations have, and so we are now working very closely in the online space. And so just the first project that we designed and put together happened to be for Crinu, but we work also with adults, and we are developing a development. Well, we're working with teachers to develop a teacher training program. And so the work we do we do work a lot with young people, and I suppose it can be considered a kind of an easier fit. And I think then to work with adults in their space, whether it's artists or educators, then it kind of the approach is a little bit different, but the content is quite similar. It's just a case of how we're kind of looking at it and where the kind of learning is. And so for working with teachers, then we need to be able to show the curriculum links and how they can harness this kind of approach within their own subject area, you know. So we're, you know, it's easy to kind of think this kind of work is this kind of fun engaging thing, and it is that, but there are lots of opportunities to go a lot further with it. And you know, when you think about it, I mean, we're all on the you know, the spectrum of the maker spectrum to one degree or another. And you know, for us, we use making as a vehicle for many other things, you know. So it's, you're dealing with the emotions of kind of failure and success, and you're exploring creativity, but of course you're gaining knowledge and skills. So for us, it's really important for us to try and find ways to bring this into kind of formal education, because we really do believe there's an opportunity to kind of bring that dimension into the kind of what can be considered quite a two-dimensional space. So the work that we're doing at the moment is working very closely with primary and secondary school, the primary and secondary school curriculum, to see how we can work with them to kind of support the work that they're going to be doing, not only in the past, but also as September approaches, because we do expect, though we don't know for sure, but that there is going to be a combination of online and offline learning. And so we see that there's a real possibility there to collaborate more with formal education, to find ways to create a kind of a meaningful collaborative experience. But we kind of realise that if it's online, then you know, we are losing a certain amount with the online space, and so we have to find ways to counter that. So you know, we send kits out, and the learning content that we develop is specifically geared, it's changed, it's not the same that it would be if we were in an in-person setting, so we change it to adapt to that. And you know, when we think about the work that we do, like, you know, it really is to kind of invite learners into the space and to bring them into the heart of the activity, and then for us to really watch and learn and support them, but only where needed. And so we're always looking for that balance between how much information that we need to give and how much space we give learners to be able to figure things out themselves. And our workshops are carefully kind of designed to do that, but our workshops online are different, the balance is different, and we have to find new ways to find that balance, because you know, there is a disconnect there. And but there's also lots of opportunities, you know, with the online spaces. There's loads of positives in terms of like creating that kind of open-ended learning experience for people, because there isn't that time limit, you know, in a workshop where it's 2 hours or a day or a course or whatever it might be. Like when people are working from home, if they have the luxury of having, you know, the time and space, then they do have that time and space to continue working on a project at a pace and in a way that they want, you know. So there's definitely room there to maneuver, and we're really looking closely at that at the moment.
So with your kind of, I suppose the good example is, I mentioned that program you worked with Fingal Libraries was Crinu Nanog, isn't it? That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Maybe just a little bit about that. And because you said it's you know, everything has been a little bit, not a little bit, it has been disrupted a lot for everyone who runs these type of activities. So with, so an example is, I think the, it's My Place, isn't it, as part of Crinu Nanog. So can you give me kind of a little bit of background so our listeners know what it is, and also, you know, what you did differently with this one, as opposed to having an in-person activity.
Yeah, so My Place, it was a free 3-week online project. We delivered it, and it was in partnership with Fingal Libraries and Creative Ireland. So it was really an invitation for young people and family members to get involved with making. And we provided, you know, kind of the resources, video resources and kits for them to do that. And it was really based on this idea of trying to get people to think about what their place could be, and to you know, give them the opportunity to show the world a place that they love and to redesign a place that they might like for the future. And so, you know, to think of themselves as architects, cyclists, city planners, artists and gardeners, and to think about how they might like to reshape a space. It could be a space at home or a space that they use regularly to show the world how they'd like it to be. And so the 3 weeks were broken down into 3D modeling was the first week, then circuitry was the second week, and then working with sound was the third. And for us, it was the first time we'd really kind of focus on that kind of online space. And it was really interesting. And the you know, as you said, that you know, you saw a lot of photos. And that's really how we kind of gauged the interaction, is that you know, the participants of the teams would send us on kind of photos and videos of their progress, and based on that then they would get new kit out to them so that they could continue working. And they don't have to, you know, some of them did stick just with 3D modeling, some of them stuck you know, just with the circuitry in week two, but just that they had the opportunity, if they wanted to continue working and to continue learning, that we would give them the materials to do that. And we were delighted with it, you know, showcased for Cruinniú na n-Óg, and we made some kind of videos, and we're actually in the middle of an evaluation of it, and we're developing teachers resources for primary and post-primary on the back of it. So we want teachers to be able to look at this project and to be able to hopefully be able to bring it into their own within their own kind of class space, whether it's online or in person. So that's what we're working on over the next couple of weeks, to have ready for educators that want to replicate this project themselves.
Kate, when you're designing a program like that, how do you approach the, you know, identifying learning outcomes, making sure there's an enjoyment factor of the project and people are enjoying the making aspects? How do you approach creating a balance between learning outcomes and having fun while doing it?
Well, we actually don't think about learning outcomes at all. And I suppose we don't really know. You see, that's the kind of the thing. It's hard to answer that question because I suppose the team involved with Make, Create, Innovate, whoever they are at any time, there's always a very strong educator's experience there. And so the workshops that we design, I don't know what we're thinking of when we do it. I don't really know what I'm thinking about when I'm doing it, but I'll tell you what I'm not thinking of. I'm not thinking of learning objectives, and I'm not really thinking that much of fun, because, you know, even though that's part of it, and fun is part of it, because I think that there's this kind of innate feeling that we get when we're using our hands. So, and I think it just innately is fun. So we don't really need to think about what other people find fun, because we do feel that this maker approach has this feeling of joy when we do something and it works. And then the learning objectives actually, you know, is, you know, we have done work on, but it's really only in the recent times where we've really looked closely and worked much closer with educators to analyze our workshops and to actually look at, to see where are learning objectives being met, what are the curriculum links and everything that goes with that from a formal education perspective. And the learning resources for this project, we were actually supposed to have done quite a while ago, but the teachers that we're working with just came up with so much rich content that it took us time to get it down. What I thought would be a 3-page PDF, let's say for post-primary, is now 10 pages. What I thought would be a 3-page PDF for primary is, I think, 12 pages. And so there is so much in that process of making that we're not even thinking about, and we're certainly not sitting down and looking for boxes to tick. But it's hard, Jeff, to say what it is. All I know is that when we're thinking about our workshops, we're thinking of creativity and we're thinking of technology and we're thinking of, yes, of course, engagement is hugely important, but that seems to work. So we don't need to really think about that so much. We just need to think about how much opportunities for creativity and exploration can we give in our workshops. And we find that by giving that space with careful planning, you know, we plan very carefully our workshops, but because they're planned so carefully, it means that space is given. And then all of that learning happens without you even thinking about it. Like, you know, if we're looking at a maker process, how many 21st century skills are happening there? Almost all of them, usually. you know, but we're not thinking about 21st century skills when we're doing it. But when we retrospectively go through this kind of work and this kind of approach, we are able to look at so much learning and so much quality learning that really can sometimes be missing in formal education. And so we want to change that. You know, we want to develop resources that show the value of, oh, it's a musical instrument. Let's design and build a musical instrument. People think that's a kind of a fun workshop. And of course it is. But there's a huge amount of learning of science, technology, engineering, arts and maths within that one subject, sorry, within that one workshop. And for us, it's a case of trying to really show teachers and show policymakers, well, where are those connections and where is the value in this kind of work and this approach? And we're doing that now. And it's really interesting to see the responses.
Yeah, I like the, especially the joy. I like that kind of popped out at me because that's the whole reason, you know, being exploring and being curious about what you're making, why you want to keep, you know, working on the project, you know, it's a joy that you're doing something physically with your hands. And I think joy definitely comes out of that one because you really want to, you know, the people who are doing the activity, you want them to engage with the activities and have fun with it, but they have to have the joy of learning and the joy of exploring, saying, oh, this is pretty cool, what else can I do? And then, you know, after giving a few you know, a guidance, that they can just go off and just be completely creative and come back with things that you didn't even plan. I think that's the thing, you know, you wanted people to create things which, you know, that you never even thought of, and that's yeah. The amazing part, isn't it?
And it was one of the questions that the evaluator asked me. She said, what did you expect the outcome of this project to be? And I said, I haven't a clue. Like, it's my place, so I hope that people are going to think about what that means to them, but I have no idea what people are going to make. And you know, there's something great about that. And I didn't even know that, because I don't really think about it in that way. We're just providing like a scaffolding for yes. people to participate. And of course, some know-how around using new materials, because the materials that they're using are almost completely new. Even when they're thinking about recycled materials or things at home, they're not thinking about how to make a spaceship out of it. They're not really thinking about how to, now some will, and I'm not saying they never have, but they're not thinking about the conductivity of the materials that they're using. You know, they're maybe not thinking about how something diffuses light. So it's kind of giving them some skills or just opening things up a little bit, and then giving them the tech and then just showing them a little bit about how to use the tech and see where they go with that. But I thought it was really interesting that I didn't know the answer to the question that the evaluator asked. What did you expect? And the answer is, I didn't know. You know, but the outcomes were amazing. Like I was really impressed. Everybody else will make draw their own conclusions, but I was absolutely really, really happy with the diversity. And that is key. I think one of the key aspects of working online is that you don't really think about that opportunity for diversity. It's because everybody's working alone. You know, they're working in their own little teams and they can't look across the room and see. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. We all learn from each other. But when they're not looking across and seeing potentially what somebody else is doing and copying that, they're able to actually just concentrate on their own process and go where that takes them, you know.
That's true.
And the joy that you're talking about exists. And it's a feeling that I get. And I suppose we all get it. You know, I genuinely think that we all get it. So it's just about kind of harnessing that and also just using that as a way to get over the failure. Because there are obviously huge failures, and that can be a difficult space. And I think to be able to move through that, which they have to do when they're working from home in a way that they don't do in the same way as they do within an in-person experience, because we're there to support them more. But at home, they have to push through. And you know, the participation rate of the project was huge. Like really huge. There really were very, very few drop-offs. From those that started to those that completed, there was very few drop-offs. And there's something really interesting there, you know?
I think it's also the safety of being at home in your own safe environment, wherever it is. I think it's great to be in a room full of people, but sometimes even I feel it that we're all learning something together, but there is a slight pressure that you don't want to fall behind.
Yeah.
And whereas this one, you can do it as at your own pace, in your own safety of your own environment. And then, you know, and then everyone in the family can get involved as well.
Yeah.
You know, and if the lockdown kind of got a little bit lifted, you can have a few more friends, a couple more friends coming over and doing stuff and showing stuff, you know. So
exactly.
So it's just a different experience. And I think all of us of all ages feel that as well. You know, you want to learn something, but then being in a group of people, you feel like you're pressured that you don't want to fall behind and make a silly mistake, or you create this bounding box in yourself and you feel like you're not as creative as everyone else. So it's kind of, I suppose, there's pros and cons in having in-person activities in the group and, you know, doing your own project at home, but you also have that connectivity. You know, kids could be, you know, calling each other, you know, streaming and then showing videos and then sharing and then, you know, having them put up online, showing what they did to the whole world. And I think, as I said, when you were talking, going through that, that's what's going through my head. It's like, I feel that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to be able to have a kind of an online space where that content can be shared, I think is something that we're really looking for. Something that, you know, where there isn't, where there's protection for young people that aren't, you know, that it isn't, you know, being thrown out on social media, but that there's some kind of facility for people to put their work and to have a meaningful, have others meaningfully interact with it and enjoy it without, let's say, the pressure of likes and thumbs up or whatever else, you know. You know what I mean? That there's a way for that to happen in that kind of online space. So we're, if any of you know of any tool that can do that, we're on the hunt at the moment.
I suppose you also mentioned like kits you sent out. Kind of what's in the kits like in that particular project?
For my place, it was really basic stuff. It was LEDs, stranded copper wire, batteries, bits and pieces like that, and just, you know, 3-volt batteries, 9-volt, or sorry, AA batteries and battery holders and that kind of thing. And then we had the sound recorder kits. We had a plan to use Makey Makeys, but with the uptake of the project was just so high, we didn't actually have enough to go around. So we decided to go with sound recorders, which I think the teams got so invested in the circuitry, that's where they spent huge amounts of their time. And the sound recorders worked for some and not for others. They were actually, I hadn't planned to include them, but there was a really nice little piece around just around what happens when things don't go the way you expect them to there. And so that was kind of included in the final week of the process. So it was all whatever kind of happened, and we kind of just felt it out just to see how things were going, because we hadn't done it before. So it was a really good learning curve for us, and, you know, really, really successful, and but also obviously lots to learn and things to tweak for next time.
So important to let everyone know that, especially those who are involved in the projects, that it's okay that things don't work, you know, that because you know, it's kind of one of the stoppers, isn't it? You know, if things don't work, I won't keep going with this. But then you know, I think the big thing is providing the support. That's what you do, and the encouragement. For some reason, the back of my head, I just have Blue Peter in my head. But if back in the days, you know, kids don't watch TV as much, so they don't have anything like Blue Peter, you know, where you can make something, find something around. When you mentioned, like, you know, how do you find recycle materials around the house? Some the younger kids, I suppose, can start drawing on papers and stuff, but most people wouldn't know to get a washing up liquid bottle to do something with, or grab that cardboard box and change it into something, which, you know, I grew up watching, you know, Blue Peter and what's the other one with Morph, you know, the art drawing one.
Oh yeah, Tony Hart.
Tony Hart, yeah. So yeah, all those, you know, grow. But I don't know if there's kids nowadays have a lot of these, if they watch a lot of these kind of type of programs, you know, the modern.
Well, they have YouTube. Yeah, they have YouTube. True. They have so much more and lots of ways to learn these skills, but maybe not a central kind of program that they would all kind
it's
of
like
watch.
Yeah, so it's more like, you know, every day, not every week, there's that program will come on, and then they'll show you how to make something, and then then you send in whatever you make or a picture of it. And it's kind of like it's so regular that you look forward to doing it. And for me, that was like before the internet came in. This was because like the form of making and the way to actually, you know, trying to you know, make your thing and then send it in and then get very sad if your thing is not shown on TV because it wasn't made. So I think this is like the next step, you know, having them, you know, we're so connected now, and having, as I say, there's YouTube, there's some social media, there's all the kids are connected in some way, you know, via like even playing games and things like that. But with all these activities, it's like a next, it's like a the next step in making online. And with COVID-19, as bad a situation it is, it has brought us to realize it can be done with our technologies, because I think even I was kind of humming and hawing, saying what can be done online and what can't. And this was particularly, an excuse to try all these experiments to see if this works or not, and what are, because people are forced to do stuff online now as well, and do stuff at home in isolation at the time, the last few months. And so I think it's, so yeah, we're all learning, you know, from yourselves, ourselves, to everyone as well who's participating.
And I think the key, you know, just on the online element is for us, it's not something that we, it's something that we can solve at the moment, but I think reaching kind of minority groups, we had planned to work with kids from that are living in direct provision, and also members of the traveling community. So that's still on the cards, but things have, you know, it's much more difficult space. It's not possible to reach online, so it's something that we need to factor in as we kind of move forward.
Yeah, it's something on my mind as well. It's like as well I've been talking to kind of I think it was Refugees Ireland. I was hoping to talk to them and see I can actually do something with that organization and bring activities to direct provision centers there. But it's just the things played out. It was just some things are just have to be kind of figured out. We've no solutions for it yet. Same here. I noticed that you also have a STEAM camp coming up, haven't you?
We've designed a STEAM camp, a kind of a 5-day STEAM camp, and then we've also designed a kind of a mini STEAM camp. And I think because organizations that we would work with regularly after the kind of initial phase of uncertainty, you know, organizations that are now putting plans in place to, to reconnect with their clients and their members. And so they're coming to us asking for solutions to this. So I think that the STEAM camp is a really good opportunity, again, to kind of engage online and just to get involved with kind of hands-on creative tech activities, much more short-term than my place is a kind of, you know, which was a much longer-term project. But this is kind of like a 2-day or a 5-day. And it's just really nice, again, send the kids out and then, you know, have your regular Zooms, but that the activities are happening offline, and that's something that's growing more and more. So it's interesting to see how kind of organizations are able to adapt to the online space in this way, and for us it's something that we're really focused on at the moment, and trying to figure out also best practice from a child protection point of view. But the STEAM camp is a great little kind of contained bunch of activities that's really engaging for young people to participate in.
Kate, when you're designing projects and things to do for when you're delivering them remotely, what sort of considerations do you have to take in place? I know if you're delivering a workshop in person, you can always have some spare materials if someone makes a mistake, or if something, if you're dealing with electronics, is plugged in wrong. So what sort of, you know, considerations do you have to take when doing when delivering these remotely, and the person is on their own essentially putting these together?
I think a lot more thought around the pre-recorded videos that we make needs to happen, because it isn't a case that you can explain something, let's say 80% well, and have that kind of 20% gap where the person doesn't fully understand what you mean, that you have to actually make sure that what you're saying is 100% correct, let's say, whatever it might be, you know, let's say how LEDs work or how, you know, how electricity flows or whatever it might be, in terms of getting them into kind of understanding how the tech works so that they can get it to work the way they want it to. So I think more carefulness around the kind of learning, the pre-recorded learning videos, to make sure that we're being really clear in what we're saying, but also that kind of balance, as I said earlier, between not giving them all the information and allowing that space to explore. So given enough information, but not a step-by-step guide, if you know what I mean. And so there's that part that's different. And then in terms of kind of mistakes, the only thing so far really, like, because we're not dealing, you know, the technology isn't really easy to break. Like, the only thing really is, you know, LEDs that blow and that kind of thing, and so they just make sure that they have enough that they can, you know, breaking LEDs is just part of the process. So you know, I think for my place, when we, one of the weeks when we had a Zoom, we kind of had this, not a competition, but we kind of celebrated who had broken most of their, you know, who had broken the most LEDs, and you know, we just sent them out more. So you know, there is a bit of flexibility around the kind of kit that they have, and we're really open to kind of, you know, if more is needed, we'll send it out. But I suppose if it's a kind of a 2-day camp, then obviously there won't be time to do that. So we just allow for just give them more, a bit more of everything, so that you know, mistakes can happen. But you know, like, there's things that kind of are, you know, things like motors and stuff, you know, we don't expect to break. You know, it's hard to kind of break a makey, you know. There are things that are quite difficult to break. So it's just kind of mostly I suppose kind of LEDs and making sure they have enough wiring and stuff like that. But so the kit side of things, and then all, I suppose it's really adapting kits, that's changed. So I bought a 3D printer there very recently, and have started just printing just small pieces to adapt, like a 3-volt battery holder, things that are really challenging, we found challenging in with using coin cell batteries in our workshops, in terms of like keeping them in place. And it's something that we've tried so many workarounds and so many different types of 3-volt battery holders, and we've even made our own out of paper and any manner. It's just this really simple thing. And so I got a 3D printer and I printed one, and I sent the kits out there just this morning. So and it solves the problem. It's a simple design, but it solves the problem. It means that you can connect two you know, stranded wires to a plus and a minus on a 3-volt battery without having to do anything else, you know. And so things like that, like the hobby motor holders as well. So, you know, a motor can be kind of a tricky thing to attach to something. It's metal, it spins, it's quite strong at times, you know. And so to just design a motor holder that also has an arm on it, that the arm is kind of interchangeable so that you can actually place it in different ways. And it's not about, we're just very careful about, we don't want to make things really easy. We're not really interested in kits that where there's a step-by-step guide and we all know what the end result is going to be. What we're just interested in is just providing a couple of additional materials so that it gives a little bit more flexibility in terms of what they use the technology for. And that simple things like, my 3-volt battery doesn't connect to these two wires, and it's really hard for me to connect, you know, and to actually insert into this project. So we just don't want them to have to spend an hour doing that. We just want them to concentrate on the rest of the project rather than getting caught up on a silly little thing like that, if you know what I mean, because we don't see huge inventiveness there. You know, there is inventiveness and creativity, but there's a few little things that I think sending the kits out makes it easier for them to just continue on that kind of making process and not get caught up in things that are not, you know, a little bit silly for us, I think, you know.
That's pretty good kit, because that always bugs me as well, like little motor holders and so on.
Yes.
And on that, because now you're bringing back all sorts of challenges I had in the past. Gearboxes are also important. Nice little gearboxes to gear down those motors.
Yes.
And servos, your little servos and stuff like that, yeah.
And I think kind of working with motors more is something that we really want to do. And I think it is about learning a bit more about gears and also kind of Lego, you know, and how do we connect things to each other, you know, because Lego is expensive, and you know, so are the bits that, and they're very well made, and you know, absolutely appreciate Lego. It's you know, Lego is it's a great invention, but when you just need one or two bits, like, we don't want want to buy the entire kit for 250 quid. We just want the bit that connects the motor to the other thing, you know. And so why don't we just 3D print it, you know, and just save ourselves a bit of money and just kind of get it and maybe redesign it so that it works a little bit better for our purposes. And so these are the things. It's about what technology do we want to use. It's all very simple, you know. I didn't come to Make Create Innovate with any knowledge, and neither did any of our facilitators. We didn't come knowing anything about the kinds of technology that we use. We came with really a lot of curiosity and a lot of passion and a very big interest in creativity and technology, but certainly and education, but the learning curve for all of us has been huge. And so we get it when somebody doesn't get it, you know. We understand the frustration when it doesn't work, because we have gone through it all, and we've, you know, cried the tears and you know, picked ourselves up and kept going and trying to redesign it to make it work better.
And just on that, Kate, what's your favorite piece of tech currently? You know, like, we all have favorites. Like I was saying last week, like the micro bits, I'm really into them at the moment. Is there anything that really floats your boat at the moment?
You know, for us, when we think about tech like that, we think about what can we use it for? And so I think the microbit is definitely very useful. And I think definitely for lots of different reasons. So, yes, the makey-makey is great from a simplistic point of view. And I think hopefully people are starting to move beyond the banana piano and really start getting into using the simplistic capacitive touch approach to making interactive board games. So like build musical instruments to create...
Board games. Tell us about having projects.
Well, it's one of our workshops that we do, and it's really successful. And you know, it's taking something that we all know, you know, a board game, and everybody knows what a board game is, and just seeing, okay, well, how can we make it more interactive and using conductivity?
I'll give it an example. Do you know, could you do something? My son loves playing Monopoly, and I hate Monopoly. It takes forever to play. I don't know who came up with Monopoly, but it's not got a great game design. Can you make Monopoly more exciting?
Well, we actually have had participants in our workshops come up with a new Monopoly kind of ideas. But Monopoly is actually really interesting, because it was designed by a woman, Elizabeth Maggie, and who designed it actually to explore a sharing and a socialist life, socialist living.
She designed it to
teach kids about not to be greedy. And so then Hasbro came along. There was somebody that came along after that, stole her idea, turned it into a capitalist game. That's the one that we know, and you know,
we read the rules wrong as well. So yeah. If you play by the rules properly, it's actually a good game. But every one of us have our own version of the Monopoly rules.
We play by the rules. That's the problem.
So everyone tosses the Monopoly board whenever something goes wrong, and it's always an angry game.
So what's the secret here to make that fun?
I absolutely, I'm not going to tell you. See, this is the thing. It's not my job to tell anybody what's fun. Okay. It's the person who's participating's job to say, well, what is it that you need to do to make a game more interesting? You know, I'm not asking you personally, but
it's because I'd hide half the hotels and half the bank would have to go in the bin. But those interactive board games, is there any particularly good stories you have from, you know, kids reinventing some board game? Anything interesting?
Yeah, I mean, we did a series of workshops with the ARC, it was all around board game design. And so depending on the time we had and the age groups we were working with, we varied it between working with kind of board games and magnets, and then working with kind of board games and makey-makey. And the outcomes were really, really fantastic. And, you know, again, some of them would take a game that they knew and they loved, like Monopoly, but they would just change everything about it. So let's say the board might look something similar, or you might move the pieces around in a similar way, but what happened when you landed on a space and what the rules were, and that it may be a game around you know, fairness rather than greed and capitalism, you know, it's up to the designers. Yeah. You know, so we, you know, we're always, and then this goes back to what I was saying earlier, is that our job isn't to tell anybody what's fun or what isn't. It's really for them to decide. All we do is to invite the learner into the activity, you know. So we introduce the activity, we invite them in, and we show them, you know, the skills, some of the skills necessary. But in terms of the creative process, well, that's up to them. And, you know, for us to get in the way of that or to explain to them what it should be, I think would be absolutely against what we believe in, because it's not who we are as people. And I don't personally, you know, I just think it's not where our interest is. We just open up the space. And I think, as I said, you know, earlier when I was asked a question about what we imagine the outcome of you know, the project to be, and I genuinely didn't know. And, you know, at the end of the interactive board game workshop, well, yes, they will have a game that can be played, but I have no clue what that's going to be. I mean, you know, it may involve a board, or maybe it's going to involve, you know, a real world, you know, interaction with people that will be connected to a makey-makey and use the conductivity of their bodies to trigger sounds and rules and score. I have no idea. And that's why we do, you know, that's the beauty of it.
You know, I mean, thinking of fun board game or fun games, do you do anything on making contraptions, you know, Rube Goldberg machines? You know, my son loves watching those videos on YouTube and tries to make things with ball bearings himself. Anything fun like that? I love those things.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. And I think there's loads in that. We actually, you know, it's something that we've considered recently. No, not at the moment, but yes, there is definitely possibility there. Yes, so I know, I think actually that's one of the things about, you know, when you asked earlier about what kind of technology are we excited about at the moment, mm-hmm. we're not really into you know, promoting technology because we're, you know, because of, you know, the association or whatever, yeah, but if we feel that it's useful, then we certainly will use it and talk about it. But actually, funnily enough, my most favorite piece of tech at the moment is my 3D printer, and I actually can't believe how into this I am. I have never been into 3D printing. I always thought it was gimmicky and crap and people just print keyrings, and you know what? So I got this 3D printer, and of course I had to build it myself because I knew I'd be the one that would be fixing it. So wow, I really didn't cool. want it, but I said, right, you just have to do it. So yay! I did it, and guess what?
Awesome.
And guess what? You know, it's solving problems. You know, it's solving problems in my life.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that it's so useful, and I just can't wait to teach with it, because there's so much in kind of, and there's so much in the consumption part of technology and whatever else. But I think when we can start encouraging kind of innovation and problem solving, whatever that might be, I think then things can really get interesting. So yes, there's the fun and the engagement, and let's, you know, redesign board games, and that's brilliant. And it's brilliant, you know, because let's look at the world and let's look at the rules of the world and how, you know, how messed up things are and how can we change it to make it fairer. And so we can look at lots of societal aspects there and really address that around ethics. But there's so many other ways around invention and design and redesign, and why does the world designed for right-handed people, and how can we, you know, so there's so much. So I think the 3D printer, I would have been sad to say it a month ago because I just would have thought there's no way, but now I'm singing it from the rooftops. Bring it on.
that's great. And what's the name of that printer, tell us?
It's Prusa Mark III.
Prusa Mark III, right?
Prusa, yeah.
Prusa, right.
Oh, it's a great printer. Yeah,
it's a great printer.
Oh, the Prusa.
Yeah,
it's a good printer. Yeah. I think, Jeffrey, you have one as well in Tog, don't you? You have two of them, don't you?
I printed for a solid 60 hours just printing circular rings on them. They're a great printer, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we followed a tweet or two, like, whenever one comes up that I can see in my timeline because they swoosh past. But, especially, like, tips like, you know, don't, you know, keep an eye on it when it starts. Or else it'll just mangle everything.
Is this a printer everybody listening could have at home? Case, is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the cheapest printer, and so I think it'll be interesting to see how we do incorporate it into workshops. So we'll have to find a way to, and for us it is a case of, you know, we really want to give people who participate in our workshops as much of the experience as possible, but realistically we won't be able to bring a printer into bring a printer into a workshop. So but a lot of organizations have their own, and a lot of schools and libraries, and they just don't know how to use them. And so for us, I think it's really easy for young people to come into a library space and say, oh, can I have a 3D printed ... something from online that they haven't designed themselves? And it's not that they don't want to design, it's that they just don't know that they can. They don't know that it's available to them because they've never designed in 3D or even thought in 3D, because you know what, neither have I. You know, I haven't thought about that, and now I'm learning how to use a Fusion 360, and it's brilliant. So, like, you know, so in terms of People having it at home, yes, they can, but it's €1,000, and for me, that's a huge amount of money. And the technology that we use, even Makey Makeys, are £50, and that's already too much. So we're not interested in that kind of cost, but we do want to bring the experience as much as possible to people. And so our aim will be to do that, but it will probably be, let's say, finding a way to design within a learning environment, and then, you know, we'll just have to find a way to kind of have them see the print happening, but without them physically being there, because it's just not realistic at the moment. But as I said, when schools get money, when they've bought all of their iPads and, you know, other things, the next kind of bit of fancy kit that they buy is a 3D printer, and they buy it and it sits there forever and doesn't get used. So that's something that I think we can certainly look at.
I think in general, the process is great, because it's, first of all, it's open source, and second of all, they do provide backward compatibility as well. Like a small extra bit of money if they get new models out, as opposed to the other proprietary 3D printers, which, you know, they'll force you to buy things and you have no way to get out of it. Their software goes out of date and things like that. And you get a chance to build a thing from scratch, and you get to eat your Haribo jelly bears along the way. We myself and Michael built one over Christmas over a few days, and he was very fastidious. He had to say, nope, they said you have to eat these squares, you need 5 bears, and we're going to eat 5 bears. I said, but you know, we're adults, we can eat as many as we want. And nope, we have to follow the instructions to the T. And I go, oh my god.
Listen, I was going to Lidl buying bags and bags of Haribos over 3 days. I got stuck into those, and you know what, it's a small little pleasure, but oh god, they were delicious.
But yeah, it's great to be able to build, because as Jeffrey knows, you know, you get to know the 3D printer a bit more if things break, because for Prusa itself, every little bit you can replace pretty much, and you can and I was so surprised a lot of the parts were 3D printed as well.
It stops you imagining it as a black box. When you put it together, you go, oh, there's a motor that does that part, and there's the heating element that does that. It becomes less of this piece of technology that, you know, someone might describe as magic. But when you have a visitor or someone come to see you and see the printer, you're able to say, well, I put this together, and it's just simply motors and a heating element, and you really know the aspects of it.
Totally. And that's really key. And I think it's one of those things that really reminded me, and I'm reminded all the time, but I suppose because I haven't done in-person teaching in quite a few months, you do miss it an awful lot. You know, you miss that kind of connection. And when I bought the printer and put it together, I was so surprised at how that feeling of joy that I had, because I made it. And it just reminds me of what Make, Create, Innovate is. That's what it is. It's about, it's just really simple. You know, it's just about making stuff, you know, and feeling that sense of joy, and of course going further, but it's just that innate kind of feeling, and that makes you want to then go back in to collaborate your machine, because it's not working quite the way it should, and this print didn't work too well, and how do you lose that fear of machinery and technology? Well, you lose the fear by knowing it better, and you know it better by actually making it yourself.
Yeah, and I think, like, just back where you said the schools, when they spent so much money on technology and iPads and all that. And I think, you know, if the next thing they get is a 3D printer, definitely this should be one that they should get, just so they know how to build it and understand, and so they're not reliant on, you know, other people outside of school to support it.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the older kids, you know, probably secondary level or something like that, you know, they can have more responsibility in senior level to, you know, look after the 3D printer and the other high tech stuff. So it's not just like when you go to a computer room, it's just like learning, you know, Excel or Word or play Minecraft or whatever. It's you know, you actually have a physical piece of equipment that the group can be in charge of and fix, and things go wrong, and you can create and make stuff. So it's kind of I think it's next level.
Exactly.
You know, it's a pricey piece of kit, but there's steps to get there, to get towards that.
Exactly. And a project that we're working on with the Department of Education is the Makers in Schools project, where we're working with four Educate Together schools to set up a makerspace. And part of that, it's a 3-year project, is when we move from kind of working with the staff and training the staff and then doing workshops with the class groups and then having the staff assist with that, then they're leading their own workshop. They're also setting up a makerspace, and they're then having the young people that are involved in that makerspace then start to run that makerspace and to actually then take on projects like how to building a 3D printer and maintenance of that 3D printer, and then, you know, kind of managing that space for the younger cohorts that are coming up behind them.
And as you say, you know, life skills you can from doing that, and as well as finding out that 3D printers can solve a lot of things, like printing out your hooks and things like that. If a clasp, I think someone I think talking to saying, "Oh, a bag on my kid's school bag broke, or the plastic clasp on their school bag broke. I can just 3D print one instead of having to chuck it and buy a new bag again." Things like that, and because the bag is perfectly fine, you know. So there's lots of things that, you know, as you say, can make instead of going and buying stuff, you can actually make it at home. And the 3D printer does help, because I actually had to tell my relatives as well, my in-laws, my sister-in-law, saying, "Oh, you can do that. I thought it was just printing, you know, little figurines or say key rings, and it's all just fun and play things. And I said, "No, it's actually useful stuff. You can actually make stuff like cases for things, you know, for us electronics, having cases for electronics. So the pegboards, having hooks for all the pegboards and things to hold yourself, holding the wires, things to keep things neat. And then there's things like for the garden as well. I went down a rabbit hole looking up what stuff I can print for gardening, you know, plant holders, you know, and things like that. So there's like so many different things that you can make. But yeah, I think we can talk a lot about 3D print. Because I'm still I've kind of stopped looking at 3D print stuff, because I was looking at other stuff as well, so I have to get back into it again. So it got me really excited. That's why I like making these podcasts. Every person I talk to is different things and get me really excited and want to just make something. So I suppose it's kind of nearing the end of the podcast. So before we wrap up, do you have anything to shout out about Make-Create Innovate, about your upcoming programs, maybe this summer or for the rest or in the coming year as well?
I suppose we're in development at the moment. We're concentrating on our kind of summer kind of programs, and we're developing workshops and courses, basically moving online. So we're in the process of making it, you know, our workshops and seeing which ones can transfer online and what we need to do that. And so there's a huge amount of work going on at the moment. So in terms of like finished kind of packages, we're just not there yet to even talk hugely about it, because they haven't happened yet. But what I think is great about this time is that if you have the words innovate in your company name, then you know you really just need to kind of get to it and adapt and see what you can do to move with how things are moving. And I think as we see more about what's going to happen with education in September, I think we'll be kind of ready to tie in with that. But you know, for us, basically it's being able to offer what we do online, and that's what we're doing at the moment. And so, but in terms of set dates of kind of programs and packages, we're no. I'd say next month I'll know more, but at the moment it's really just a case of kind of planning and developing and moving everything into a space so that we can really try and keep as much of this kind of connection that we have in this in-person experience, and try to have you know, as much of it as we can online. That's really our focus and our goal.
So where can the listeners find you online?
Yes, so we are on Twitter at mcreateinnovate, on Facebook at mcreateinnovate, and our website and Instagram at mcreateinnovate, and our website is makecreateinnovate.ie. So keep tuned, sign up to our newsletter if you want to know what's coming up, and we will send out anything that's coming up, we will send out to you. So do sign up, or just keep an eye on our website or Twitter, or you'll see it all there.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kate, for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's the end.
And remember to hit that subscribe button to our podcast. We are also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So take care and stay safe. This is Vicky signing off from the Dublin Maker Podcast.